This is River to River, live from the Law Library at the State Capitol. I'm Joyce Russell. Thanks for joining us today. Our topic this half hour is a number of pieces of legislation that have to do with opioid overdose. These are ways of addressing the state's heroin epidemic. Give us a call at 800-780-9100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Tweet us at IPR Talk, message us on Facebook, or email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We have on the line from Davenport, Kim Brown. She lost her son, Andy Lamp, to a heroin overdose back in 2011. She is now an advocate for some of the changes in state law that she believes might have saved her son's life. Kim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Joyce.
What do you know about the details of your son's death?
The details. Well, he died May 25th, 2011, of an accidental heroin overdose.
And I understand that he was not alone when he died, and that's what's behind what you're wanting the legislature to do. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. And when my son overdosed and died, there was another person there in the house with him. And as you know, I've been a big advocate to get naloxone into the hands of family, friends, and peers of active drug users so that we can stop these needless deaths from either prescription drug or heroin overdose.
So you're imagining a scenario where you and the people your son was with would have had this drug that they could have used in this emergency?
Well, you know, certainly they could have had the drug. There were other states. I know New Jersey and I also know Maryland. Both were very busy on overdose prevention and awareness back in 2011, 2012, and they had already passed laws allowing the overdose rescue drug to be dispensed to EMTs, well, you know, EMS, law enforcement, and family, friends, and peers of drug users.
And so there are two versions of this legislation. One would give both the general public and emergency personnel access to this drug. Another bill would be just for emergency personnel. How important is it that, and there seems to be some broad support for that, how important is it that the general public also have access to it?
Well, I think it's important because if you look at the latest CDC report that came out, I think, in June of 2015, you can see that the most reversals or rescues using naloxone were done by lay people. In fact, 82.8% of reported reversals were carried out by people who actually use drugs. As opposed to that, in the last 2 years in North Carolina, 52 law enforcement departments carried naloxone and had 39 reversals. North Carolina Harm Reduction trained and equipped lay people with naloxone, and they had 2,123 reversals in the same two-year period. And if I might add, people that use drugs typically are not going to dial 911 for help because they fear arrest and punishment. Should they be followed up with medical treatment once they're reversed with naloxone? Yes, they should. I'm a registered nurse, and I certainly believe that. However, if they don't call law enforcement and other folks around them have naloxone, they're going to save their life.
Well, you're making reference to another proposed piece of legislation, and that is what they call a Good Samaritan law. Mm-hmm. And that's so that if, let's say, your son was with another drug user, that other drug user would have been afraid to call for help. And so the Good Samaritan law would give limited freedom from prosecution for that person. How important would a law like that be?
Extremely important. It would bridge trust with folks in the community that are using drugs with law enforcement. It would provide immunity for simple possession, being under the influence and having paraphernalia on them. So it would be a step in building trust, and in that regard, we could start saving some lives.
Okay, well, we're going to bring a couple of lawmakers on to talk about some of this proposed legislation. Representative Jared Klein and Representative Kevin Kinney. Kevin Kinney, a Democrat, Representative Klein, a Republican. We'll start with you, Representative Kinney, because the Senate has passed a more wide-ranging bill that would put this antidote into a wide range of hands, including the general public, and would also enact the Good Samaritan provision of this. How important do you think this bill to make the antidote more available? How much good is that actually going to do?
I think it's going to it'll make a big difference in maybe trying to save some people. I do have a problem with giving someone immunity for just calling to law enforcement or first responders. And the other problem is the people that do have OD'd on heroin. I've investigated a couple cases where there is naloxone in the person's system and they did not receive help or they did not go to get help after they were given naloxone and they eventually wound up dying. So there's a... I do feel that it's useful, but it's not going to be a cure-all.
Right. So maybe you would like to see something in there that would, I don't know what, mandate treatment for this person who's just had his life saved so that it you know, the same thing just doesn't happen again?
Well, how are you going to mandate the treatment after they're dead? I mean, you're going
to No. I mean, if you've used the antidote, it saved that person's life. And some people are concerned that, okay, you do that once, but what keeps them from just repeating the incident?
The other issue, I think, a bigger issue in this is you could have someone that is actually a very large drug dealer that may be the person that made this phone call, and you're then granting them immunity from prosecution. And it's just not a simple possession. There's more to it than just the possession of a controlled substance. It could be you have to look at each situation on their own, and I just don't want to give a blanket immunity.
Okay, so I was under the impression that the Senate bill did include this immunity from prosecution for the bystander.
One Senate bill did.
The
other did not.
Okay. Well, Representative Klein, what arguments would you add to the arguments against this Good Samaritan provision?
Well, when you're talking about arguments, I think you got two legislators here that in a lot of ways agree on this issue. And, of course, it's nice that we do also represent the same area because we're coming from some of the same things. The Good Samaritan law and the general public use does definitely give me a couple heartburn issues, one of which is people using it as that safety mechanism that they're going to push the limit. They're going to try to get a little bit more high because they might just have this safety mechanism sitting there in their back pocket. That causes me some real concern because that seems to be a driver among the people that do use these drugs is they want to get a bigger and better high each time they go after it. So there's some definite concern there of using it as a safety measure, people not knowing that they need to get people to the hospital. This isn't going to be a fix-all. This is really more of a delaying sort of an issue until you get them to real professional medical help. So the Good Samaritan aspect, Senator Kinney's right in a lot of ways. That does provide some serious possibilities for abuse there. So that's the middle ground we're trying to find between the two chambers, which is why it's kind of a hard one to nail down on which bill are we talking about, which amendment are we talking about, because we're trying to find that middle ground to be able to get this product out there in the countryside where we have people that are vulnerable and far away from medical professionals.
Well, Kim, what's your reaction to the maybe the hesitation that the Good Samaritan aspect or even the distribution of the antidote could actually encourage more drug use?
First of all, there's quite a bit of difference between simple possession, paraphernalia, and being under the influence. And I would be the first one to say that I would never condone or encourage drug trafficking. We're talking about two different things. And I believe that if it's simple and somebody's calling for help, there should be some limited immunity to prosecution there, because otherwise the person that they're calling about is going to die. Or the other scenario is they're going to say, why bother calling? We're going to get arrested. And they run and they leave that overdose victim laying to die. And we know of a whole lot of those situations across Iowa. Secondly, I have talked to active drug users. The last thing they want to be is reversed with naloxone. It's very uncomfortable. They're put into immediate withdrawals. And I can assure you that they're not going to sit around with heroin in one hand and naloxone in their back pocket and get as high as they can. They couldn't reverse themselves. They'd have to set up a situation where somebody in the room with them would reverse them in the event that they overdose. That's not how active drug users think. They don't want to overdose. They don't want naloxone used on them, and they do not want to die.
Okay. Well, we're going to bring Wayne Germain on now. He's the chief of police for the Cedar Rapids Police Department. Thanks for joining us, Chief Germain.
Sure.
Okay. Tell us about your experience with overdose cases as an officer, and what's your take on the Good Samaritan law?
Well, I've been listening to the conversation, and I think all the parties have extremely relevant, pertinent points of view. My experience is I've witnessed firsthand from being on the scene just here in Cedar Rapids of a woman who had overdosed, and she was by all accounts dead until the EMS providers arrived on the scene and gave her Narcan, and she was up and talking within 10 minutes. I mean, it was really amazing. From a position here as chief, and I've been speaking with my colleagues from all over the country, especially those from Maryland, where I was from, and also from the New England area, where they have really a serious problem with heroin overdoses and related deaths. And I know many of these jurisdictions have allowed law enforcement to carry Narcan and administer it. It's very safe to administer, even to individuals who are overdosing on something else other than heroin or an opioid substance. So if an officer arrives on the scene and someone is unconscious and the officer is not able to determine what they have overdosed from, if he or she was to administer Narcan, it's not going to have any adverse impact or effects on the individual. However, if they are overdosing on heroin or an opioid, it does have an immediate positive impact. So I've heard the points about not granting overall blanket immunity, and I agree with that. I think there does need to be some review and study to get something that will fit in Iowa and satisfy all the concerns. But the most relevant point is saving lives. And I know Senator Kinney is a former law enforcement officer, and I know he values the sanctity of human life, and that's why we've taken the oath, and that's one of the areas that we're trying to do here in Iowa, and that's why I'm in favor of providing law enforcement officers with Narcan.
Well, let's turn to that other piece of this then. How many people should have access to these antidotes? There's one bill from the Senate that would give it to the general public. The bill in the House, one of the bills in the House, would limit it to law enforcement. So, Representative Klein, what are your arguments against making this more readily available?
Well, actually, the bill that limits it to just law enforcement, I believe Senator Kennedy has a bill as well that does that. So we have companion bills in both chambers that get it to those first responders. And I also want to quick add in that we seem to be focusing a lot on the people that use heroin and those sort of drugs, but this is also something that can be useful when we have our elderly folks out there that are on a lot of these sort of prescribed drugs that sometimes get confused, maybe take a second dose, and we have to clarify this gets used in those situations as well. So I want to make sure we're painting this in the most broad picture we can, because that was a story shared with me just this morning from a colleague that affected an elderly person.
Okay, well, briefly then, what is your main argument against making this antidote drug available to the general public and not just emergency personnel?
The general public issue is going to be one that we got to find that middle ground on. I'm not sure how we get there yet. At the very minimum, I want to get it into law enforcement, first responders, public safety people's hands. And then down the road, I think we can start to get closer to figuring out how we get it to the right people. There are certain family members most definitely should be included in this. But how do we narrowly tailor it so that we're not using it out there with the drug dealers and the bad actors? That's the challenge we face, and that's what Senator Kinney and I have been working on, is how do we find the middle ground between the two chambers.
We have a caller on the line. Sylvia is a recovered heroin addict. Sylvia, are you with us? You're from the Quad Cities. Thanks for joining us.
I am, and you're wrong. I am not recovered. I am in the process of recovering. I've only been sober a couple of months. Here's the thing. The gentleman said he didn't want the antidote in Spokane until he found the middle ground. I assure you, these users are using as much drugs as they can get their hands on, regardless of whether there's an antidote or not. The proof in that is that there are deaths left and right. It doesn't matter. And you're saying, well, we need to give this to the family or support system. Do you really believe these addicts are telling their families that they're addicted to heroin? They're not telling their families. My family didn't know until they were broke and they wondered where all their money went. It's a terrible thing. There is no middle ground.
Okay, Sylvia, thank you for your call. Senator Kinney?
We also have to look at the people that are using prescription medications. As Representative Klein had stated, we have had cases where people have overdosed and died on prescription medications because they were confused. They were an elderly type person. Representative Klein is correct. We had companion legislation. The companion legislation that I had brought forward did add that family members and or treatment facilities could also have access to the Narcan. So we're not only looking at the heroin aspect of it, we're looking at the prescription medication aspect of this also. And that's why, you know, they came to me and they sat down and explained to me that there are people out here that are accidentally taking too much heroin, or not heroin, prescription medication, Oxycontin, whatever it may be, and they are also overdosing. And that's where I decided that, yes, I am going to bend a little bit and would allow it to be prescribed by a physician to a family member.
Well, what's your take on what our caller had to say, sort of contradicting what Representative Klein said, that if you make this too readily available, it will end up in the hands of dealers and have a way of encouraging drug use? What's your take on that?
I think that I was on the heroin task force for 2 years, and people are trying to ultimately get that ultimate high. And to me, I'm worried that if it's in the drug dealer or the drug user's hands, that we're going to have more people possibly dying from overdoses because of that.
Okay. Well, Representative Klein, there's another related bill that you have been working on. And this has to do with prescription drugs, not with heroin. tamper-proof pills is the subject of that. Tell us what that would do.
Yeah, tamper-proof painkillers. This is a relatively newer topic in the last few years that we've been working on, and it is somewhat attached to this because they both deal with opioids. But right now, this piece of legislation is aimed at directing insurance companies to cover certain tamper-proof painkillers. So when a doctor has somebody that's there, just had back surgery, they're likely to go on to a heavy-duty painkiller, but this person doesn't want to get re-addicted, or the doctor maybe helps identify that they're a high risk for addiction. This would give them an opportunity to get that tamper-proof medication, and then in turn the insurance company would have to cover it, which is where the hang-up is on who pays for it. But the generic drugs are starting to come on the market now, so the price will be going down. But ultimately this is an issue that when the doctor and the patient come to the conclusion they need something that has a less ability for them to get addicted to, that we get that provided.
I've got a little bit of a problem with it because you can go on the internet and find out how to get around it. You bake it, you put it in a water soluble, and then you can inject it.
Okay. Thank you for each of you for joining us today. Kim Brown, Chief Wayne Germain, Representative Klein, and Senator Kinney. Thanks all of you for joining us today. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Dennis Reese, John Pimble, and Tony Denner. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are available at iowapublicradio.org. We welcome your comments and questions. Contact us at any time at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Joyce Russell, River to River, a production of Iowa Public Radio News.